the disconnect is, I know that real estate makes sense, but in between is where I'm going to mess up and go buy something without really understanding all the details. So this is kind of allows for somebody that's got, in cases, accredited. So they've got some amount of wealth, and basically connect them with a general partner that would run with that syndication and provide a return that would exceed, in many cases, what they could go in the public markets.
All right, everybody, welcome back to another episode of the Birmingham Real Estate Investor Podcast. I am one of your hosts, Spencer Sutton, and I have with me my co-host, Matthew Whitaker. Matthew, welcome to the show.
You know, you're kind of getting weak sauce on the intros. For a while there, I was all types of awesome things, and now you're just introducing me.
I'm so tired of talking to you on this podcast.
Well,
I'm kidding.
The good news is we have Craig here that's going to blow everybody's socks off, so you don't have to talk to me.
Yeah.
Why don't you introduce him?
Our guest, we've got a great guest with us today, Craig Lawrence, who's a partner with Balch and Bingham here in Birmingham. And so, Craig, you specialize in real estate, so we are excited to get to talk to you. So welcome to the show.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me. Look forward to getting into it with you guys.
It is really exciting to have a high-powered attorney on here. So instead of two goofballs, we've got somebody legit. Right.
Instead of just property managers.
Yeah, we're going to get some like real advice finally. So one of the things, Craig, you're really interested in real estate. And so what I want to know, just kind of kick everybody off, is talk about kind of your journey being an attorney and then also being interested in real estate. And you're also interested in kind of startup world. So kind of tell everybody a little bit of a background.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Well, when I was in grad school, I actually started off doing both the MBA and law because I had just had this kind of passion for finance, this passion for business, this passion for startups. Going to law school, kind of trying to figure out how that all fit together. And so kind of coming through grad school, I got really deep into the startup world, worked with a couple of different startups, different capacities. So I actually at one point worked with a Bitcoin startup. This was some number of years back. And actually went into the business world, worked with Cadence Bank. At the time, they were privately held. So, of course, I left before they went public, which is, you know, as you'll see, that's about how some of my career advice has gone. I got to work with their private equity team, which is this group out of the Northeast called Sageview Capital. And so doing spreadsheets, learning index match functions, and just really enjoying the process of kind of putting together finance, putting together business. Kind of all of a sudden sort of got this weird feeling of, hey, I went to law school. I should be really using my law degree a little bit more. And I synced up with my buddy, Drew Jenkins, who he and I had clerked together in the Senate way back in law school. He had started this little real estate shop. At the time, I didn't really have that much interest in real estate, but kind of was more geared towards startups, more geared towards small businesses. So he had started this little small real estate law firm. And I was like, what are you doing with this with this law firm? So of course, I had a good thing going at Cadence. Of course, I just, you know, walked out and decided to join Drew across the street. We started a little shop. That's really where I first started getting into real estate, working with investors, doing closings, dealing with all sorts of real estate at that point. Since then, my legal career has been sort of gone less towards startups and then more towards real estate. That startup mentality has always been mixed in there, definitely. So since then, I've had an opportunity to go to bigger firms and work with bigger clients. But the cool thing to me about real estate is 1 + 1 = 3. Like in the real estate syndication world that I am often in, you're dealing with somebody that's a really good manager, somebody that's really good with the real estate, and then somebody that has capital that they're willing to put into play. And so kind of when you combine those two things, it's kind of a match made in heaven. And that's, you know, in large degree, what working with a property management company is like. You're dealing with somebody that's an expert, so you don't have to be an expert yourself. So it's just lots of, I guess you could say it's sort of captured my imagination the same way that that startups originally did. So it's been a fun journey for sure.
That's a great story. Talking about your entrepreneurial journey, you sound like an entrepreneur. You said, I quit a good thing. Like, in other words, everything was going right, so I decided to quit and go start something new. And that,
of course.
That every entrepreneur out there right now can be like, yep, that's exactly right. Things are going way too good. I need to break something and go, go fix a new problem. So I always hear sometimes that there are wartime CEOs and peacetime CEOs, and all of us entrepreneurs are definitely wartime CEOs.
That's right. Now,
sounds like you're the same, Craig.
That's right.
You know, the interesting thing too, I actually wrote this down even before we talked, because I was kind of thinking about what we would talk about today, the name Charlie Munger came to mind. And if anybody knows Charlie's story, he was first an attorney, and then now he's kind of an investor, and he even appreciates and enjoys real estate. He's done a lot of Los Angeles real estate. So I'm curious, number one, obviously, you know who Charlie is, correct?
Yes.
Number two, talk about like the entrepreneurial itch along with being an attorney, and how do you kind of deal with that kind of split personality in that environment?
Yeah. So, I mean, a lot of people have the impression that the last couple of firms I've worked with, we've had almost 300 attorneys. So a lot of people get the impression that working with a law firm, they're going to be your, got to do it this way, got to do it this way, got to do it this way. And in certain cases, you know, you have to do things a certain way. But I think a lot of the best transactional attorneys that I've worked with are try to help get the entrepreneur or try to get the real estate professional to find a way to say yes. So, I mean, really from an attorney's perspective, the easiest answer in the world from a risk standpoint is to say no. So you can say, oh, no, you can't do this. You can't do this. You can't. That's the easiest advice that requires the least amount of thought, the least amount of understanding of the actual underlying business. And the best, I think, in my opinion, the best legal advice is these are the risks. You are going to do this. This is some of the things that you need to think about. And this is how we mitigate those risks. If you're out raising money for an apartment syndication, you can get sued a couple of different ways, one of which is on the dirt itself, one of which is on the, you know, from your investors. And obviously complying with securities regulations is never going to be 100% perfect. And you wouldn't want to spend unlimited amounts of money getting it 100% perfect just because there's diminishing returns on things of that nature. So I guess you could say I live vicariously through my clients. I work with some very successful, very wealthy investors that I would consider basically in many ways my friends, just because I work with them so much. I get excited about their deals, you know, in some cases more than they do sometimes, but I get to do cool things with them. Tomorrow I'll be in Virgin Islands for several days looking at property. So there's some cool things that come along.
We do that back every day.
Yeah.
So, the benefit of, working with people that are doing it at a high level is you get to see how they do it. You know, getting to see large transactions is a lot of fun. At first, when I started off just doing investors that were doing house by house, I started thinking about apartments in terms of, okay, well, we could get 30, 50, you know, 100 of the same cash flows all in one deal. And that's where it kind of clicked in my mind of, you know, that's kind of the same concept. It's just really hard to do 30, 50, 100 closings in, you know, the same amount of time. So it's all sort of the same, but definitely seen in a larger scale is a lot of fun. And you know, y'all can see I get a kick out of it. So
for sure. You know, it's interesting advice. And I totally agree with you is about, you know, finding an attorney that will be very clear on the risks, but part of being an entrepreneur, part of being an investor, a real estate investor is it's going to be carry risk with it. But you having a basic understanding of that and then getting back to a Buffett Mungerism, making the right bets on a consistent basis, knowing what the risks are, is great advice on finding an attorney that won't overlawyer any deal or overlawyer, you know, any decision. I'm curious if you have any other advice being on your side of the table. What advice would you give somebody on finding a good attorney to represent them?
I would say the best recommendation would be similar to finding a good property management company would be just talk to people that are doing it at a very high level and see who they're comfortable with and ask, you know, the right questions. There's so many subspecialties within real estate law. I mean, it's, I got a call earlier on a residential thing, it just came up on Google. But generally speaking, if you're focused just on real estate syndications, you're going to be a little bit better at real estate syndications by being narrow. And so having someone within that little specialty is going to be really important. With syndications, you get into a lot more securities. So my training is a lot more on the dirt side of things, but I have to interact with, on our 10th floor, we have all of our securities folks. So if you're, you know, raising a 506B or 506C, just being familiar with what, you know, things someone needs to be thinking about, or if they're going in all the way and going with a fund where you would have, you know, multiple projects or multiple properties all put together in one fund, just being familiar with kind of what direction the client needs to go. Because a lot of times, if someone's starting to set up a syndication or starting to set up a fund at the beginning, they're still trying to really get a feel of kind of what direction to go. And so a lot of times they're seeking input into, okay, I think I've got the ability to raise $10 million, but I don't know how long it's going to take me to find the right property. You know, is this sounding more like a syndication or is this sounding more like a fund? Well, somebody that's really not living in that world is going to, you know, it's just a subspecialty where, you know, if you're going for a certain type of surgery, you'd want somebody that's familiar with that. And, you know, we've got several people that focus entirely on apartments. So just having the right industry expertise is helpful as well.
That's great. Just having a deep understanding right. of what you're trying to do and somebody that has seen it a bunch of times before. We always talk about in property management, like we approve and decline so many applicants and then somebody tries to jump in this business and doesn't know even the first step to underwriting an application. And you're like, it's the biggest piece of property management is getting the right resident in your home. And why would you not want somebody who's an expert at getting the right resident in your home, putting that person in versus you who may not know what to do with an application? So all that kind of holds true. So I would love to know, talk about the basics of a syndication. So let's say somebody is fairly new to real estate and wants to understand, he keeps talking about the syndication. Tell somebody kind of a 20,000 foot view of the basics of a syndication.
Sure. So a syndication is just a really amazing way of combining capital, which would be generally sourced by passive investors, with someone that would be a sponsor or in my world, we often call them a GP, which stands for general partners, kind of the lingo from when we used to mainly have limited partner structures. And now we've gone a little bit more towards LLCs, but a lot of times comes about in my experience in the apartment world, although you could use it for single family, you could use it for a lot of different areas, but basically you've got somebody that's a subject matter expertise. They're full-time. This is what their career is. They're, you know, they fix and flip maybe like take a C class apartment and move it up to a B class. So they're doing a renovation. It's a 3-year business plan and they're shooting to give you, you know, a 16 to 20% IRR. So you come in as the passive investor and you look at their business plan and say, hey, this looks great. I've got $100K that I want to invest with you. Here's all the documents. I'm going to sign all the documents. You invest $100K and then you might get monthly distributions. You might get quarterly distributions, but you would get, in many cases, distributions along the way based on what the cash on cash return would be. A lot of times you'll see in the presentation materials that would be somewhere in the neighborhood of around 6%. So if they've got 100K in my example, you know, they're getting about 6,000 per year. So that's nice money that's coming in. And then there would be the upside when they ultimately go through the disposition at the end of the time period. So the reason I get so excited about it is the passive investor doesn't really have to know an incredible amount about all the complexities of this, this, and this, and this, which to me is the big disconnect in real estate. You've got so many folks that no real estate makes sense. They've maybe read a Bigger Pockets book. They understand little parts, but they might make a lot of money in a W-2 position, right? Maybe they're a doctor. You know, maybe they pull down $400 a year doing surgeries. Okay, well, somebody that's in that position, they don't need to stop doing surgeries to learn real estate necessarily. And so the disconnect is, I know that real estate makes sense, but in between is where I'm going to mess up and go buy something without really understanding all the details. So this is kind of allows for somebody that's got, in cases, accredited. So they've got some amount of wealth and basically connect them with a general partner that would run with that syndication and provide a return that would exceed, in many cases, what they could go in the the public markets, like, you know, an index fund or something like that. So that's kind of the general structure. A lot of different variations, just depending on the specifics of the deal. But that's what you would see in a lot of cases.
Let's talk about both sides of that. First of all, Spencer, 100K means $100,000. I know you were confused.
Oh, 100K. Oh, I was thinking like $20 or $10.
Oh, sorry.
No, you're fine.
I was kidding.
We're giving him a hard time. So let's talk about both sides of that. So you have a limited partner, generally a general partner. And sometimes you kind of do this under an LLC structure. But the whole point is you have two different parties. You know, the party that I would call the expert, which in most cases or some cases is the general partner, the right. real estate expert. And then you have the limited partner who is a financier of the general partner's deal. So one of the things I want people to understand is kind of the mindset, because Craig went a little bit into it in the limited partner versus the general partner. The limited partner is I have access to money. I just don't have access to deals and I don't have access to expertise. But if somebody will introduce me to somebody that has the deal and the expertise, then I have the money to invest and participate in that. Now, sometimes people, and these are doctors, attorneys, accountants, you know, busy professionals, salespeople that may make a lot of money. So that's a great way to invest in real estate without having to be on the front lines of it. The general partner, I think, is important too, because what is the motivation behind a general partner? The general partner has deal flow and expertise, but doesn't have the money to do all the deals that are hitting his or her desk. I think a lot of people would think, well, why would a general partner, if it's such a good deal, go out and raise capital from limited partners to do the deal? Because if you think about it from the general partner's perspective, I can do more deals. I can do the deals that are coming down the pike. And of course, I can spread my risk. I'll probably participate with some of my own capital as a general partner, but then I can spread my risk over multiple deals. So I'd love to know from you, Craig, what do you see from general partners? Well, let me ask you this. Let's say we're talking to a bunch of limited partner potential people out there. What would you look for as a limited partner in a general partner? Like, how do you find them? And then once you find them, how do you vet them?
Yeah, that's a good question. So a lot of folks that are getting into being a limited partner for the first time, you know, are unfortunately thinking it's as simple as, you know, just press a button. And so a lot of times they'll end up on some website that's got projects on there. And, you know, their mindset is just find the highest IRR, that basically the highest return that you would be able to get from apartment deal or a syndication deal. The part that's lacking a lot of times is being able to underwrite the deal for themselves and just have a really good sense of how good the sponsor or general partner is. A big part of this world is introductions. A big part of this world is referrals. You know, if someone reaches out to me and says, hey, I'm looking for a single family rental, I can refer them without hesitation to you guys just because I know of what line of business you're in, how many systems you've implemented, do what you guys do. And so I can easily refer them. Well, in that situation, you know, equivalent would be talking to other limited partners that have worked with general partners before. And a big part of it will be what sort of reporting will you get. You obviously need to understand the economics of the deal specifically, but you need to look a lot deeper than just what the quoted IRR on the page is. Some folks, I just heard this just before we got on a call. A lady had put her entire life savings, which was very significant. She put it into one syndication deal, and a guy was absolute fraud, took all of the money, and he ended up in prison, but she ended up with nowhere to go. I mean, she lost her entire life savings. So doing due diligence, I mean, I can help with that. Always recommend running a background check on folks. But in this industry, working with someone that has a strong track record and has referrals and is well into the industry, and, you know, this isn't their first go around. They are newer, which is fine. They're partnered up with solid property management companies that have a lot of expertise. And if it is apartments, you know, they have that track record built up. And if you can get to know them and the network, I think that's very important. But I wouldn't necessarily just say find a high IRR and wire the money. There's folks that will accept that. But if you're working with a GP that's just advertising some IRR, that's not necessarily someone you want to work with.
Yeah, a lot of GPs will actually advertise a very conservative IRR just because they know, I've done this before, I know I can get over this hurdle. And then it's kind of the under promise, over deliver. They understand that in the long run, as long as you're consistently delivering returns, that you're going to be successful. And it's not their first rodeo, not their first deal. You know, Spencer and I often talk the two things which you kind of brought back up. This comes up in almost every single one of our conversations. Just a reminder to everybody, two things to be successful in real estate. I at the end of the day,
after this, if it's a small deal or a big deal.
It doesn't. No matter what you want to do in real estate, you can be successful by doing two things. Networking. And that doesn't mean showing up at necessarily a B&I group and just, you know, throwing networking right around. Whether that's having lunches, reaching out, meeting a lot of people, asking a lot of questions. Networking can be done outside of cocktail hour, but meeting a lot of people and hustling. If you meet a lot of people and hustle as an LP, you're going to be successful because you're going to meet the successful GPs. And so those are the two things that keep coming up time and time again. Well, talk a little bit to the GPs now, Craig, the general partners, the people that are the deal makers, the ones that are having these deals come across. Talk about finding, and the advice probably is going to be about the same, right? Talk about finding great LPs to invest in your deals.
Depends on where you're starting out. If you're starting out from scratch and you're somewhat new to the industry, I would say the best thing you can do is really try to align yourself with someone that's got industry expertise. If I'm buying an apartment building for the first time, I need to find a really good property management company to help me think through, okay, what does this look like? Does my pro forma make sense? I need to find, you know, some folks to put around me that can really help my track record as a new guy. Because one of the things that you'll do when you raise money in this space is put together a little pitch deck business plan that says, here's who the team is. Put me on there, you know, as your attorney, put your CPA, whoever you're working with, whatever, if they've got track record, and take their advice into account. And you can show it's not just you. You've got the property management team, all of their expertise. You've got the legal side, whatever that looks like, all of the tax side. Really, when you go to sit down with investors, you want to show that you've got the expertise, you've got right track record to bring this to bear. But a lot of times, you know, when you're starting off, you're using personal relationships, as you guys seen many times. So having that personal relationship, the first go around is built heavily on trust and what your experience has been with that particular person already. And so that first raise is almost less built on exactly what the specifics of the deal is and more of who they think of you kind of as a person. So just a good reminder to be
that person, right?
Be that person helps a lot. And so sitting down, I would say have your plan put together. Whoever your law firm is could certainly look at that and make sure we're not blowing any securities rules, but sit down and have an understanding of who your target market is going to be. A lot of times your target market may just be accredited folks. Well, in that case, you're going to have to sort of be understanding, okay, is this person a good fit for me? Am I a good fit for them, et cetera? If you've got a specific deal, people are going to be pretty interested learning about the specifics of that property. They're going to be pretty interested learning about the specifics of what your plan is for that property. And they're going to hear you. They're going to, largely speaking, hear you out and take that meeting. It gets a little bit harder if you're talking about a fund. Fund would be not the easiest place to start. So if you're talking about a fund, that would be like, hey, we've got a directive to go buy this buy box. So we're going to go buy 100 houses here in Birmingham. Okay, that's great. But your imagination can't get your head around 100, you know, things that don't exist right now. I mean, they do exist, but it's a lot easier to start with a project specific, quote unquote, syndication. So once you have that business plan put together, you would get enough committed verbals that you would be like, all right, Craig, I'm ready to spend the legal dollars to get our full-blown, you know, legal docs put together on this. And maybe somewhere along the way, you would make that determination, but you would continue to network and continue to get comfortable and then make sure you've oversold it. Because when that PPM comes across, it's sort of like a downer to be like, oh, here's all the ways your investment can go wrong. So you need to oversell it to get past that and be like, okay, you're still excited, right? Okay.
No doubt, like, getting somebody to verbally commit that it's a good idea to writing the check is a long distance.
Yeah, so it's a big difference. To me, that's like a friends and family. Maybe your first deal is a friends and family syndication. And then once you have a track record, then you can go back and say, hey, this is what I was able to do. And when your reputation, you're able to show some results, it'll get easier and easier for you to go out and do deals like that.
Right. And a big part of that too is what election you decide to go with. What's come out recently is more advertising, more options under the SEC rules to go with advertising. And so you'll see things on Facebook, things on Twitter that are within the rules that you can do now to pursue accredited investors. So those are, the entire world is definitely changing. But if you have that track record, there's definitely a market there.
So I've got a few friends that do this in other markets and they're great investors. In fact, we've had meetings, them walking me through their deals. And so this is something that I'm excited about one day. But I think one of the pieces of advice I would give is, if you're a new general partner, find some people that have a number of these deals under their belt. They may be willing to participate with you and you do a lot or all of the work and use some of their credibility. And of course, they're going to make the lion's share of the revenue or the income. But, you know, make sure that you can use them and use their credibility and kind of get a one shot at kicking this thing off with some people that know what they're doing. The second thing I would say is it is easy to ask for money. A lot of people have a lot of fear. I had a lot of fear about asking for money, but there's a lot of people that think this is fun, that are the LPs, the people that are willing to give you money and exciting. And so you need to know that they want to find you. And so you just need to get out there and start having those conversations. One thing you mentioned was the word accredited investors. Just for clarity for the audience, tell everybody what an accredited investor is.
Sure. Yeah. I refer to it as the 1-2-3 rule. So you're accredited if you have a net worth of over $1 million. That excludes your house, unfortunately, your equity in your house. But if you have a net worth over $1 million, you are accredited. And then you can also be accredited by your income. If you personally make 200 grand per year or with your spouse, you make 300 grand per year. So the 1-2-3. Depending upon who you talk to, as little as 6 to 10% of the population is accredited. So that is a big narrowing factor, which is why, you know, folks will oftentimes choose the 506B, which would allow you to get up to 35 unaccredited folks. You've got a little bit more disclosures. You got a little bit more lift on that end. And then you'll see like the Grant Cardones of the world do an A+, which is basically like some people call it like a mini IPO, which would allow you to take more unaccredited folks as well. So with the 506C, you would get the opportunity to broadcast your investment opportunity to the entire world, which would be like Facebook, Twitter, wherever you want to put it out there. But you would be limited under a 506C to accredited folks only, which would mean that when they sign up with you, you'd have to send them to some portal where they would actually have to verify that they are actually accredited. And, you know, that can be challenging if you're trying to work with your family and friends and folks in your network. And some may be accredited, some may not be.
Let's take a step back and let's just talk about general real estate principles. I'd love to know kind of some of your blocking and tackling lessons, maybe 2 or 3 lessons. You've been in real estate a long time. You've seen a lot of stuff. What are 2 or 3 things that you can teach people so that they'll be successful, whether they're in syndicating deals or not?
First one sounds overly basic, but I would really carefully read your purchase agreement. And that sounds like, oh, that's so basic, Craig. You don't have anything better than that. But reading your purchase agreement is really important. You need to, on the commercial properties that I'm involved in or retail or multifamily and things of that nature, the contract gets chopped up a million different ways. But at the end of the day, on the buying side, you have to be really, really clear on what circumstances will allow you to close and what circumstances will allow you to back out of your contract. If it's a financing contingency on residential contracts, you don't want it to be, you know, you're going to use some best effort, some standard that nobody really knows what that means. Am I supposed to go talk to, you know, 70 different banks? So I would really read it and understand it. If you don't know what it means, ask the question. I mean, one of the best negotiation strategies that people ever use on me is they'll say, hey, I read it where it says this. Walk me through that. What does that mean? And maybe they're, you know, maybe they're trying to tell me the words I used didn't make sense, which is entirely possible. But, you know, what they're trying to do is really flesh it out to say, okay, I read this. I'm thinking about it. What does it mean? Do we need to rephrase that? And unfortunately, the same goes for your title policies, your title markups. I see a lot of folks not pay a great deal. And I know this is kind of, I guess, potentially dry, but if you have your title work come back and you've got, you know, you've got a piece of raw dirt and you've got a big easement running through the middle of it, we've run into that situation before, and you don't want to be post-acquisition realizing that that's the case. A lot of times it's like, oh, all this came back, you know, it's probably fine, you know, whatever. I mean, the stuff that gets on these residential policies is just like unbelievable. You know, just from the way we would do stuff on commercial. But I mean, they have exceptions on there for pretty much anything and everything. Like here's your insurance policy. And then it's like, accept anything that's like ever existed ever. It's like, okay, well,
accept any potential.
That's good insurance policy, right?
So, well, insured as long as nothing bad happens.
Right. As long as nothing bad. Title insurance is the only thing where you can write it knowing all of the risk on the front end. So it's, pretty amazing that some of those exceptions exist, but just really ask, I mean, even if you don't know what a document is, just ask the question, ask whoever's involved, the attorney, whoever's doing the closing. Okay, I see this. What does this mean? It doesn't matter where you sit in the deal. If you really are in the deal and you don't really understand, you ask someone, you know, call me, you know, whoever that would be willing to look at something or help you out and just ask the question. I just wouldn't. Seems like there's a lot of people willing to sign and just see how it goes. And that seems to be, you know, a formula for something to go sideways later down the road.
Well, if you're new at something, you don't want people to know you don't know. And then you're willing to sign it because you're like, well, I guess this is how everything works. And you just kind of rubber stamp everything. And then those are the types of things that can bite you years down the road.
Yeah. And if you're getting financing, ask your banker. I mean, I see this is in the language. Is this what you guys mean by this? And, you know, if you talk through it with them enough, in some cases, they may say, well, we could rephrase this. But the people that seem to know the most are the ones that say the most frequently, this may be a dumb question or this is a dumb question, but what are we talking about here? I mean, at some point, like, okay, what are we doing here? So the willingness to raise your hand and say, I don't understand this document, that's a lot better than signing it and just hoping nothing goes wrong. So
I've done that.
I would say that's an easy piece of advice right there.
No, it takes a lot of confidence to sit there and say you don't know something and try to seek advice from somebody. But at the end of the day, like what you want is you don't need to be so worried about what other people are thinking. If you don't know the answer, you really need to ask the questions and empower yourself for the knowledge. It's shocking how many times I've done this and or somebody's asked these quote unquote dumb questions that end up actually being legitimate questions. And then all of a sudden it changes the direction things are going. So ask a lot of questions, become an expert, make sure you're reading all the documents that you're signing is great advice. Spencer, any last thoughts?
No, this has been great. I'm glad we talked about syndication because it's become a very, very popular topic, even in the single family world as people try to put together a bunch of investors to take down portfolios. So thank you for your time here. So if anybody wanted to get in touch with you, Craig, how would they do that?
Yes. Best way would be drop me a line on my email. It's clawrence, clawrence, at balch.com. I'll definitely respond to everything I get and love to hear what you guys are working on.
Well, thanks so much, Craig, for joining us. We really appreciate it. And if you have not already subscribed, please go ahead and do so. Leave us a review on iTunes, and that's a great way for people to find us. We'll be back in 1 week with another episode.